Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of the Mundane Festival Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lamberth. Today is Sunday, October 11th, 2020. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and even Podbean, the host site. If you like this show, please rate and review it on Apple Podcasts. Let everybody know why you like it, because it makes me feel good about myself and it makes the podcast more noticeable for people who are searching to find something new, something, dare I say, enlightening for their listening pleasure. And if you do that, that would make me feel good, and it makes things better. So do that. This is episode 457. I have a super special return guest, Luisa Diaz from the Why You Mad podcast, one of my favorite podcasts to listen to. It's up there. It's in my top 10. Yeah, I would say it is. I'm going to, dare I say, top 10 favorite podcasts to listen to. I think she's doing a great job over there with Jake Flores. So I think they're doing good stuff over there. So you should listen if you are not. I'm going to share that conversation that I had with Luisa with you in a few moments. In a few moments, I'm going to share that with you. Right now, I'm sitting on my couch. It's a beautiful Sunday, although very cloudy, but a beautiful 63 degrees right now. I had a nice little breakfast. I had some cereal. I had some Great Grains raisin cluster cereal. It's good. I went to several grocery stores trying to find it, because I had went to a ShopRite. I did go to a ShopRite and find it, but the first time I had it was at a Stop and Shop, and I made a trip specifically to find that cereal at another Stop and Shop, and they didn't have it. And then I found that they had it at ShopRite, so I got two boxes there, and I'm on my second box, so I will make another trip to get more of that cereal. You didn't need to know that, but that was a part of my life, and that's a part of my life that I would like to share with you as compelling podcasting. oh my God. Happy early Columbus Day or Indigenous Peoples Day, whichever one you celebrate. If you're celebrating Columbus Day, it's the wrong one. And you are going to hear about that tomorrow on Twitter. And I look forward to hearing those, not hearing them, but reading those tweets tomorrow all day. And I look forward to that, and hope everybody has a great Monday tomorrow. And I hope that as you're reading those We Didn't Land on Plymouth Rock tweets, I hope you're listening to me in the background as you're reading through your Twitter feed. This week was pretty good, I would say, this past week. You can catch me on the Three Guys On podcast, and you can also catch me on... you can catch me on those most recent episodes, and you can catch me on the most recent episode of the Hot Firestarter podcast, which is also Three Guys On, Firestarter podcast, Why You Mad, Black Guy Who Tips. Some of my favorite podcasts to listen to and to be on and to make those appearances. So including this podcast and the Patreon episode that will be uploaded today, there's almost 10 hours of me talking to you in a microphone. So aren't you guys lucky? All right. So this week, TPS reports by day, looking for an exercise bike. I think I found one. I think I settled on one. I'm still tempted to get a PlayStation 5. I don't think I'll find one in the wild, because I wasn't able to pre-order one. I'm really tempted to take the November 12th off and go looking for one in somewhere around town. I kind of feel like I shouldn't even be giving this away. I think that I might be able to find one at a Sam's Club or a BJ's or a Costco. I'm thinking I could. But I'm not sure. Because I found out on Friday that the PlayStation, 90-some-odd percent of the games are backward compatible, and Naughty Dog announced that pretty much their whole PlayStation 4 catalog is going to be backwards compatible on the PS5. And I'm just thinking, how good can The Last of Us look? Can that game look any better than it already does? And I don't know. But I think the nerd said it would be a faster or a better frame rate, whatever that means. I guess so. It's going to be quicker, look better. Loading times will be quicker and all that stuff. And now it's kind of got me thinking, like, okay. Because I said this on the Firestarter show, I was like, all right, if they're... I was good with not getting one until maybe February. And then they released that NBA 2K21 next gen trailer. And those guys, like, I'm not gay. I'm not fucking gay. But I looked at it and I was like, Steph Curry looks great. Klay Thompson looks great. He winked at me. And I was like, oh my God, my heart stopped for a little bit. I was like, Klay Thompson is winking. He's winking at me. And the sweat, like, you know, like, it's glistening. It looks great to me. That was something I was like, oh shit, this is going to be amazing. Then Miles Morales, see, I'm kind of like, damn, if I can't find a PlayStation, do I get it? I would just get that game. I don't know. That's temptation. I'm a mortal man, just like everybody else. I have my faults. I have my what do you call them? They're your things that make you human. You can have all these elevated thoughts. We can have elevated thoughts, but stuff that kind of like brings you down with everybody else. Like you're, I don't know. I'm going off tangent, but what else did I want to say before I get you to Louisa? I beat God of War. I went into it in depth on Patreon, but I really loved it. It's a great game. Atreus is the best NPC of all time. I don't know. I'm not a hardcore gamer, but that's the best NPC that I've ever played with in a video game. You almost make your Kratos, who's a god. It's almost hard to do. Well, his son is. He's hard to be without. Let's just put it that way, without spoiling anything. A game that came out 2 years ago. And it took me, you know, I had the game. I bought it from GameStop used. And I started playing it last year and I just got stopped. And it wasn't because of the game. It was just because of whatever I had going on. And I stopped it. And then I wanted to get back into it. And I just traded it. No, actually, I bought it digitally because it had like some upgrade with the armor and stuff like that. And then I gave the hard copy that I had to my coworker's son, one of my coworker's son. And I said, your son has a PS4, right? He's like, yeah. It's like, do you let him play video games that are kind of violent? He was like, oh yeah, he plays everything. And I gave him that. I gave him a God of War and I gave him Uncharted 4. And then like a week or two later, I just said, oh, how did you give your son the games? He's like, yeah, he's playing it. He's playing that God of War. And I was like, oh, what does he think? He's like, he was playing it all weekend. It's loud. It's like, it's really loud. Thanks, Chris. So I'm glad his kids enjoying it. Yeah, so I think I got to finish out the DLC on Spider-Man PS4. There's one more DLC that I need to finish. And then there's another game that Rod told me about that I have to get. And then I have to finish Control and Ghost of Tsushima. And so, yeah, so I'm going to do those. And I still have fun playing my PS4 Pro. What else? Let me give you a quick movie review and then we'll get to Louisa. I saw this movie a couple nights ago, last Wednesday, I believe, called Charm City Kings, which is an HBO film. I thought it was a series at first, and it was kind of billed as like this Meek Mill movie, but Meek Mill is in it. He has a central part in the film, but this movie is basically the Google blurb's not that great. So Rotten Tomatoes isn't that good either. It just says a young boy joins a dirt bike gang in Baltimore. But this movie was based on a documentary called 12 o'clock boys, and it's a documentary film about these kids in Baltimore. A Baltimore boy named Pug idolizes a group of dirt bike riders who raise havoc on city streets. Lacking any other significant male role model, Pug hopes to join their ranks one day. So this apparently is something that I need to see, because this film was adapted from this, and Barry Jenkins has his hand in the story, and it's from Overbrook Entertainment. So that's Will Smith's production company. And it's an overall good movie. Like, it's a coming of age story. And again, like, I kind of, my marker for a good movie is kind of being invested in the characters. And if I talk back to the screen, or I'm like, oh fuck, why are you doing this, kid? You know, like I feel like I'm invested, and it's actually good. So when I'm doing that, anytime I'm doing that, I think the film is worth your time. One thing that I thought was really good is the way that they used they really did their homework on the Baltimore accents, and like with the liquid use. Theater nerds know what I'm talking about when I say liquid use, but it's like to and do. What are we going to do? What is we going to do? Like the way that they talk, like Tiana Parrish, especially, because I know she's not from here. The lead actress, she's not from Maryland. The lead actor, Jahi Diallo Winston, who I believe is from Atlanta. He did his homework, and he was really, it gave his character another layer. And it was like, yeah, this kid's doing the work. Because previously when I had seen him and stuff, I kind of thought he was in Proud Mary with Taraji. And I was like, this kid's like annoying. I don't like this kid. But it's not him as an actor, but it's just like, I thought the kid was kind of annoying because he wasn't doing what he was just being a smart alecky kid. But I look at his credits, and he's been in some stuff, man. And he is growing to be a good actor. He was in this show called Everything Sucks. Short-lived show, but solid, on Netflix, actually. He was in the New Edition show, story, Young Ralph Tresvant. So this kid's a good actor. Because I think I had this conversation with Rod maybe like a couple months ago or whenever, like, people not using, like, you spend all this time, you're doing this movie in Louisiana, you're not trying to talk like you're somebody from Louisiana, you're just like, I'm in this movie and I'm getting my check and I'm in the movie, but not doing the work to. So I appreciate this kid, young man, Jahi Diallo Winston, Tiana Parrish, and then I think quite a few of the other actors might have been local, there might have been other actors that did it, but I think whoever was the dialect coach really made it a point for them to, you know, speak the way that they were speaking. Meek Mill, I don't know that he really did one, but he was good. He was actually really good to me. I don't know much of his work, his rapping. I don't know what he's done as a rapper. I know he's popular. I know he had a feud with Drake, a beef, as the kids call it. But he was good in this. Yeah, and so it's a good movie, coming-of-age story. Certain things you can kind of see that's pretty predictable, but a good movie nonetheless. And, yeah, I enjoyed it, so I recommend that. Let's get you to Louisa. I got a disclaimer. We were talking about Pen 15. She was going to come on the show to just kind of shoot the shit and then talk about Pen 15. And then the pod kind of became something else, and we talked about Pen 15 towards the end, but we had this great conversation about just like everything that's going on now, Trump getting sick. This was recorded about a week, literally a week ago, as I'm recording this intro. And so some things might be a little outdated, but things may have passed already, but so it goes. The show is not evergreen, but it's a good show nonetheless. We talked about showbiz coming back, and I mentioned Bill Burr me being excited to see like Chris Rock the last week and Bill Burr this week, which I think he crushed it. White people are mad. They didn't get it. And they didn't, they try to say stuff. Something was homophobic. Just because you mention gay people in a premise or a bit doesn't mean that you're being homophobic. If you actually listen to the set, but, and I'm not trying to sound like a pretentious, comedian, but you know, if you, you, just because you mention a certain term or a certain group of people, it doesn't mean you're racist or homophobic. It just, I don't know. We kind of talked about like the past two episodes, you know, talking to Gabe last week, you know, we talked about what it means to be edgy and there's stuff in the comedy community that came up by, with the compound media folks and all that, what people think is edgy as opposed to what really is edgy and what is just crass and pedestrian, when it comes to stand up. So yeah, it's been, but Bill Burr, he crushed. Like I, it was Bill Burr. Like he's one of the greats. You know, I talk about him all the time as him being one of my favorite comics. It's kind of funny to get people, I see people that are actually new to him, and I see like where some black people are like, I never heard of him, but he was pretty funny. And then people posting the clip where he did on Conan, where he said nothing's going to change with Trump in the office. And people say, but what about what he said right here? And even there's things that I didn't like about that. Like, you know, like because he's a rich white guy, but it's not his. You can't look to him or Dave Chappelle or any of these people in show business to save the country. It's supposed to be the people in political office to do that. Whether you agree with them or not, or think he's funny or not, that ain't his job. His job is to do what he did last night. Kill, be funny on stage, and entertain people. And that goes for, you know, a lot of, you know, that goes for everybody who's in showbiz. But it's nice when people who are in that industry do things to try to better their community and society at large. So, you know, I think that's important to note, because, you know, we've been getting a lot. This is a long intro. Who gives a shit? It's my show. We've been getting like a surplus of black male celebrities just talking about hold your vote. What is it? What is it for us? It doesn't mean anything. Blase, blah. And, you know, it was good to see Sam Jackson talk about voting, voter suppression, and him endorse Biden and Harris. You know, I voted this week, and, you know, I'm just a day player who says a couple lines, who does the job well. Like, you know, I've gotten some parts and stuff, and I do stand up. I have failed running back in stores wherever you buy and stream music. You know, I'm very low on the totem pole when it comes to showbiz. But at the same time, like I tweeted that, you know, I voted for Biden and Harris. I'm not holding my vote. And I would be remiss if I didn't say anything about it, if I have my very small platform. But it's a platform nonetheless to, you know, say what I want to say and try to put out positivity in the universe. Sometimes I fall short of that. But at the same time, you know, I'm trying, you know, like most people are, like most of you listening. So without further ado, I want to get you to Louisa. We talk about Pen 15, but there's certain plot stuff that I don't know if Louisa remembered, because I think she kind of binged everything. But at the beginning of the show, the two leads, Maya and Anna, they're talking about the first day of school, of junior high. And that, those episodes are the first, season one ends with the school dance. Season two starts a couple of weeks after the dance, and they're at a pool party. And it's, the series starts, season two starts where season one left off, and it's not like another school year. It's the same year. So the first two seasons of Pen 15 as they exist now is over the course of one school year. So that's what we weren't clear on, because I didn't get to check it while we were in conversation. But I really love having Luis on. She's so smart. I like her, the insight that she has on pop culture. And you can see me make my thinly veiled request to be on Why You Mad. So without further ado, please enjoy my conversation with the very lovely and delightful Luisa Diaz. I was looking at the last time that you were on here, and it was almost a year from the day that your episode was published. It was like October 6th. Yeah, I was like, I thought like you had been on earlier this year, but I guess the years just kind of,
this year just has blended. Like, weirdly, it's like super slow, but super fast. Like,
right.
Yeah.
It was, I don't know. It's crazy. Like, this year, like the past few have just kind of jumbled up and like, what day is it?
Yeah.
And I know you work. So is that keeping you kind of relatively sane? Like, when you're having a schedule?
To be honest, I don't know what I would do if I didn't like have a schedule, I guess. Yeah. But even having one, so it's hard, because like, so having a schedule and working every day from home, it doesn't make it like, okay, I have a sounds depressing, but I have like a reason to get up, you know?
Sure.
Like,
no, yeah,
like a thing I have to do, and people are waiting for me, and I gotta do this. And I do enjoy my job, so I get satisfaction out of completing stuff and whatnot, but it does sometimes feel like a purposeful distraction, you know?
Sure. Yeah.
And like, I look up after a 10-11 hour workday, and I can't believe how quickly like the day's gone, and it's dark, and it's not like there's like much nightlife or anything really to do.
Yeah.
So it's just like your day's over after you work, and now you just like turn around from your computer to your TV, you know? So it's like this really messed up experience of like time slowing down, but then suddenly like disappeared, you know?
Yeah.
Kind of like September completely, just I don't know what happened.
Mm-hmm.
I remember August vaguely. Like, somebody yesterday was like, how was your summer? And I was like, oh fuck, summer ended.
Yeah.
And, like,
yeah,
I had not even realized, even though it's like cold and everything, I was just like, yeah, I just, it didn't register, you know? Like, I don't know. It's pretty weird. So I'm glad that I have it. And I can imagine it must be difficult, or at least for me, it would be difficult to not have a structure. And then for you artists, mm-hmm, I imagine the additional anxiety of the future of your careers.
Yeah.
And, you know, what's going to happen in the winter, in the short term and in the long term, must be really difficult.
Right.
Like, in general, the long term, short term thing, I think, is what's stressing us all out. Like, having a job every day means like I know what I have to do tomorrow.
Right.
But I have no capacity for like what happens next week or next year.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I'm just like, just keep your head down and focus on this. So I don't know. I don't know. And then at other times you're thrown into what's going to happen next year and the rest of the world, mm-hmm, with things like the election and COVID and whatever. So yeah, just overall stressful. I don't know. How have you been taking it? Because you're working, but are you working regular schedule?
I'm working from home, and then we alternate 3 days a week going into the office.
Mm-hmm.
And so this week now, I'll go in for 3 days, but I'll probably go in an extra day because there's, you know, I take it from Office Space, the TPS reports that, mm-hmm, need to get done. So I have like a 2 week time frame. So I'll just try to go in as much as possible. And then there's a podcast that I'm doing this week. So I feel like, okay, if I'm excited about doing this podcast, but I want to knock out as much work as I can so I can feel comfortable about like leaving work early during the time where I got a project, yeah, you know? So,
yeah, of course.
And then like, I don't know how your office is, like when you ever go back or when you, before everything hit, we all have two monitors, and so, mm-hmm, like that's like super helpful, and you realize how much I missed it just being with one laptop, you know. And it's kind of like, well, I'll be in the office, I'll have my monitors, when especially when I want to like really work on something.
Yeah.
So
that's what was one of the things I'm still annoyed by, is, you know, most of us or many job fields have switched over to being remote, right?
Yeah.
I work in media, and my company basically has said like, for sure, the rest of the year, we're not going back to the office. And it seems very possible that a lot of positions, at least, maybe not every position, because there's people who do have to go to like specific studios to do certain kind of work and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, it does seem like we're leaning towards, well, we're just going to keep it like this forever. And,
yeah,
you know, I see the positive of working from home, but I also like hate that we're giving corporations this like pass to not have to pay for our air conditioning for the whole day and to not provide us with good chairs and to give us the two screens we need to do the job.
Yeah.
So, you know, it sucks that I have to do, or like we all have to do our job with our home internet as opposed to like a big corporate fast internet.
Yeah.
And it's all these little ways that are going to make our jobs more annoying and more difficult and slightly slower. And the companies are willing to take that hit in productivity and in employee satisfaction because they're going to save a lot of money if they like sell buildings and they don't have to provide all this infrastructure.
Yeah.
So I don't know. And to be honest with you, I miss commuting a little bit.
There's something in that though. I mean, there is a bit of I don't know. I did it more when I was in Chicago and for about a year or two when I moved here. But like, yeah, it was something like you put in your head, back in my day, we used to put it on their iPod and you listen to your music and it kind of gets you into that mindset. And like me, like, I guess driving into the city to audition and do shows, I miss that like a lot. Like I miss stand up, but then I'm starting to realize that I miss everything around it too.
Yeah, same.
Yeah, and it's like man, it's just kind of a bummer because I saw you, I was looking at your Instagram, you know, like when you would post stuff, and like you were a couple weeks ago down in the Jersey Shore area.
Yeah,
that was like the last place I performed. That was like the last area where I performed at. Some like I did a week at the Borgata. And then I did like this show, like a one nighter in this bar, like nondescript bar. And then they had this back room that was like a warehouse. And it was like, it was fun. It was like a really good time, like in middle of nowhere, New Jersey, Weartown, New Jersey.
Yeah, that's definitely what I miss, you know, with all the outdoor shows that have been happening.
Yeah.
You know, I see the clubs are still doing shows, but then like, I don't know, the experience, I guess what I miss is those dive bars, you know?
Yeah,
I miss
yeah.
I miss showing up to a dive bar and there are comics outside who are waiting to go up, who are hanging out, catching up from their last spots and the last time they saw each other.
Yeah.
And then the bartender who knows you, you know, because you come to the show every week or whatever. And then just, I guess, like the kind of audience even. I know that... especially club comics will make fun of like Brooklyn audiences and alt audiences or whatever. But
yeah,
there is something to the fact that like when something is off the beaten path and harder to find, that means people usually had to like make an extra effort to find it, you know, like
right.
For sure. There's like the people you bark in and the people who are just regulars at that bar and the people that got trapped into a comedy show.
I've been on millions of those.
Yeah. But then there are like some gems of shows and some audience members that are just like real fans who really like stand up and really want to see new people and new faces and new comedy, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I miss that environment a lot.
That speakeasy vibe.
Yeah.
What is it like for you as someone who books and runs shows? Like, what is it like to go see these outside shows? And Gabe Pacheco was on the current episode, and I said, "Hey, man, I hope you're doing new material." And he's like, "Yeah, yeah." Like he's talking.
Yeah, yeah.
But Gabe is, and I kind of just had to ask him. But even though he's a veteran, I would assume that he would be. What are you
but
seeing?
You know what?
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, like, Gabe also, I feel like he didn't really stop all of this.
He never stopped,
Yeah, he kept doing Zoom shows, you know, and I think when a lot of us were making fun of the Zoom show, Gabe was really working on, like, how to make a Zoom show be good,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah,
and, like, seeing the limitations, but, like, figuring out how to have audience interaction and how to, like, who gets muted and who doesn't and telling the comics, you know, this is an actual stand-up show. It's not just going to be like shooting the shit like a podcast.
Yeah.
He puts on good Zoom shows, and then I think that meant that he was like, he continued working on topical stuff, you know, and like a little bit of new jokes. But in general, you know, as far as performance, I have seen it all. I've seen like some club comics bomb horribly with like old material. You know, I've seen some bomb horribly with totally new material.
Yeah.
I've seen new ones, you know, like every level, everything. But I was talking to a comic about this because, you know, this comic's instinct was to be like, oh, I better not see you out here in these outdoor shows doing old material.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, I understand the instinct to like judge each other like that. But I actually think that the comics that I've seen just go up and do all new material and just bomb into the ground, like, that's irresponsible, man.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
you're not putting on a good show. You are acting like you think that the show and the audience exist for the purpose of you working out.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not the reality. The reality is you exist, well, not you entirely, but in your role as a comedian.
Sure. Yeah, no.
You exist to provide a good show. And I think, like, the really successful comics that I've been seeing doing, like, good sets and, like, putting on really good shows have been doing a good mix of, like, I start strong with like A material. When I win them over, I throw in some new things. If it starts to not work, I pull it back and win them over again with something I know works. And ultimately they figure out a way to make the set both good for the audience and useful to them in their development, you know?
Yeah, I think that's the best way to do it. I mean, even before the pandemic, I knew that I wasn't going to get anything out of the set if I just did well. I would have to challenge myself to do something new and to get, you know, try another wrinkle in a bit or something like that. Yeah.
That's a really good way of putting it, that you wouldn't feel challenged by just doing it all.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably why this comic, or why comics will tend to be judgy of like somebody doing all the new material. I mean, all old material.
Right.
It's like, how are you even challenging yourself? Which is funny though, because as a producer, watching these outdoor shows get produced.
Yeah.
Oh my God, Chris, it's so funny. Like, it's just a nightmare. It seems like a nightmare to produce these shows.
Mm-hmm.
God bless them. Thank you to every person who's out here putting on these outdoor shows, because it's like a logistical nightmare, you know? Even like telling people where to go. It's like, you have to go to this park and to this corner and look for this landmark. And then, you know, I've been at some where there have been fireworks, barbecues, birthday parties, children running through the stage area.
Jesus.
Fire trucks and like police sirens. There was one show, Petey Diabru's show.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God. It was so funny. Great lineup, lots of people, but it was like on outside of a brewery.
Mm.
And which meant like the sidewalk outside of a brewery. So the stage was the sidewalk right directly in front of the business. And then the audience, half were sitting like basically in the street, like where the parking area would be. And then the other half of the audience is across the street on the other sidewalk. So every 15 minutes, a bus drives directly through the middle of the audience.
Jesus Christ.
And it's so funny, because it's just like, watching comics deal with a bunch of shit that they never really had to deal with before.
Yeah.
And it is kind of fun to watch how they will react, whether they will be like angry about it or play along with it and make it fun for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just been, I consider myself to be on hiatus, on vacation.
Sure.
For the rest of the year. I really don't, I'm supporting them. I'm supporting the people going through the hellish work of putting these shows on.
Right.
But it's just, I don't think it's for me. We'll see.
I feel the same way. And I have partly, I kind of feel like I told Gabe, I just said, you know, I have an admiration for people doing stuff like that. I think it's cool. I think it's punk rock and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But it's just like, maybe I could just have a break. And you kind of realize, I don't know how you feel about this, but I just think being in New York City, being an adult with a job and pursuing an artistic endeavor or just any type of endeavor, outside of what you do to earn a living. Maybe mm-hmm. you're doing something to one day make a full living so you could leave that, you know, corporate world behind. But in the meantime, it's like, I haven't not realized how long I've been doing this, like just this, whatever the fuck I'm doing as my life. I mean, ever since I guess if you could count it since I got out of grad school, maybe 25 years old.
Yeah.
It's like, and I'm 40 now, and it's like, whoa, I've really been going.
Like, yeah, that's so funny. I've had exact same revelation, Chris. You have no idea. Like this year with the whole, like, we can't go out, everything. I just, like, caught up with so much stuff in my life. Like, I realized, I mean, it's unfortunate because we can't, like, really date or any of this stuff. But so I can't, like, catch up in that way. But well, some people are dating.
I got upset when I saw a Facebook post of somebody that I had a crush on. And that she's talking about her new boyfriend is letting her bring dresses into his apartment. I shouldn't even be saying this shit because somebody could find out who it is. But even if she knows, I think she may have an idea, but like, whatever, I don't give a shit. But I was just like, really? I was like, really?
I know. What's Hannah's last name? I can't remember. Oh, Boone. Hannah Boone. You know her?
I know the name. I know she's funny on Twitter.
She's a very funny stand-up comic. Okay. And I saw her at a Park show this week. And it was funny because, you know, following her on Twitter at the beginning of the pandemic, she had a boyfriend and they, like, were living together, I believe. And then she discovered, like, a month into the pandemic that he was cheating on her. Oh. So she had, like, a full-on breakup in the middle of this shit.
Mm-hmm.
And then, no lie, I see her at this Park show. So this happened probably, like, 4 months ago, I want to say. And then I see her at this Park show, and I'm like, hey, dude, how you doing? Like, I know you've been going through a breakup and whatever. And she's like, oh, yeah, no, I started dating someone else. And I was like, oh, mm-hmm. That's great. So you're having a good time? And she's like, no, we broke up yesterday.
Oh, shit. Like,
how are you all still finding people to break up with? I don't understand.
I don't know.
But it just made me think about, like, how silly, like, in regards to what you were saying about being busy for decades, right? I really did. And it's also this, what do you guys call it? Connie's grinding, right?
Yeah.
Mentality. Where you're just like, that's what you're supposed to do. And even I feel like I have fed into that because I do like and book and respect comics who I feel grind, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
So I'm contributing to that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, maybe this is our first and only chance ever to just take a pause and stop for a minute. You know, when I started college, I worked 3 jobs. And then as I got promoted and stuff like that, I would drop some jobs.
Yeah.
And so I basically worked at least 60 hours,
Jesus. Plus
went to school full time for over a decade, you know?
Yeah.
And then I got out of school, grad school, and I just, quote unquote, just had to have a job, right? One job. And I immediately put all my time into stand-up. And mm-hmm. it's weird because I'm not a comic like you guys, but I put in the same amount of time and grinding.
Sometimes, you know? More to a certain degree.
Yeah. Fucking weird, you know? Like, I don't know what I was thinking. Now I'm like, I mean, I really love it, but thinking back on it, and I made so many great friends and had great experiences, but Chris, there were times when I turned down dates because I had a comedy show to go
to. Shit, I don't know if I would do that.
Yeah, you see what I mean?
Yeah,
you wouldn't do that, but I know plenty of comics who date like this. We can go on a date, but it has to be in the afternoon before my mic, and mm-hmm. we can go on a date, but not on Fridays or Saturdays, because that's when I work the club.
Yeah.
And so it's like, no, you do the same thing. You force the women that you date into accommodating the fact that you're not available on nights and weekends.
That's true. You know what I've done? So I think I've done the opposite of that. I think I just closed everything off and like a psycho. And didn't let anybody in. And when it was time to let somebody in, where I felt, oh, it's time to let somebody in, then they weren't.
You don't know how.
Yeah. Well, when I open myself up to it and mm-hmm. it's like, and it doesn't work out, it's like, well, fuck that. That never worked. But these jokes work. And
yeah, that's true.
This acting works. And that's the only thing that's been faithful, as cruel as this industry is. And Lord knows it is. It ain't never done me like no woman. So it's just like, it's so it's kind of, and that is not good, and I need to address that. But I think I'm open, but I am open to that. So I think I'm trying to write about that. Like one thing that COVID did is like it made me buy a final draft, and okay. I need to figure out, like, I see it in my head and I need to get it on the page, you know. But
that's great.
Yeah. So it's a thing though. Like it, I don't know. I watch my parents do it just in other fields, like more in the labor industry. So it's just kind of like, they did it. They worked hard. I just do it another way. But
yeah. Well, you know what I would say is like, something that the grind culture doesn't allow us to really realize is that, creativity is like really linked to free time, you know, like,
yeah,
in the history of humanity, the people who had the opportunity to be artists were people who had the luxury of having free time,
right?
Because they didn't have to spend every single day doing physical labor in order to survive. It meant they were not only had the time, but they had the strength intellectually to go do intellectual labor because they weren't exhausted from physical labor all day, right?
Yeah.
And now somehow in the future, in the modern times, we all, because of capitalism, exist in this thing where we're like, grind, work as much as possible, get another job, have 5 side projects going, like, don't stop moving, because if you stop moving, that means you're not doing enough. And we still produce creatively, right? Even with 5 hours of sleep, even with 17 responsibilities and 4 jobs and a family and other things that people have going on, you're all still doing creative things, right?
Yeah.
So imagine if you had time.
And I think you're absolutely right. I think that's the one thing that I would get jealous of. I was like, oh, this guy has the time to do this.
Yeah.
And, you know, I have a job and everything. But I think one thing, I think within the last 5 years, 3 to 5 years, I always say that with everything when I try to make a statement, but I think it's true. Mm-hmm. It almost seems like, I think your podcast has done that. I think when Brandon Collins and Mike Brown had Comedy Outliers, you got this kind of like pointing to the fact that some more people have time than, and the people that are having these like pursuits of creative pursuits and all that stuff, a lot of them got money.
Exactly. Yeah. Which is what gives them time, frankly.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they don't have to. I've talked even about laundry on the podcast.
Yes.
And it's true.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
If you have the disposable income to pay somebody to pick up, wash your clothes, bring back your clothes folded, those are 3 hours of your week that you can dedicate to your art, when there are some of us who cannot afford that service.
Right.
So we go and we spend the 3 hours, and then while we're waiting, we're reading the thing or we're doing our writing in between that, you know, like,
yeah,
we figure out a way to make it work. And it sucks that we're just, programmed to not see that that's unjust and not the most efficient way. So I guess I'm trying to think of this pandemic time as like, if you can, right? Excuse me. If you can afford to like slow down for a minute, right?
Yeah.
Then do it and take the time to work on jokes or work on a different thing that was like your B thing that you were like, I would do this if I had time. I would write sketches or I would do this other. Work on that.
Right.
Do the alternative thing instead of, I don't know, killing yourself to do open mics in a park. I mean, you should do that if that's what you like.
Yeah.
Stand up. But if you're not getting anything out of that, then maybe consider just stopping to think for a minute.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I feel like, you know, part of me feels, and then like what you said about the laundry too, on why you're mad. It's like, you're like, and if you do this stuff, if you can pay people to do that, you fucking take care of them and tip them.
Absolutely. They're literally freeing up your personal time.
Right. And I know, I feel like, I mean, I watched SNL last night. It was okay. I know people try to shit on it and everything, but like that episode it kind of made me feel, it just made me feel a little bit hopeful about the arts in general. I mean, I don't know.
Really? I didn't see it. Why did it make you feel hopeful?
Just that they're back, you know?
Oh, I see. I see.
You know, that kind of make, because I'm as much as, you know, we can always be cynical about stuff. It's easy to do that and everything like that. But I love showbiz.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
You know what? This might be maybe a transition to what we wanted to talk about. But yeah. That's what's funny. It's like, I love TV, art, media.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there is always room to be cynical.
Oh, no, it always. Oh, of course it is. Yeah, of course. No,
I really think like really appreciating art, mm-hmm, or like any kind of human expression, it has to come with critical thinking. You know, it's yeah, almost like, you know, like if you have a pretty girlfriend,
mm-hmm,
and you're like, I love this girlfriend, but when she talks to you about the things she wants to do with her life, you tune out. You know, and it's like, well, do you really love her? You actually don't listen and you don't care about any of the thoughts or anything.
Right.
Really loving her would be being concerned with her inner life and her yeah, goals, and like being wanting to be a good listener to her. And I think that a lot of times, a lot of people are not good listeners to art. Mm-hmm. they're just being like, I love the aesthetic of this, or this person is so celebrity, like, I guess, like attractive, charming, whatever is the yeah, thing, you know. And so then when somebody, I guess like me, is a party pooper who wants to be like, oh, but here's this thing that is probably we should question.
Yeah.
And to them, it just comes off as like, you're not letting me enjoy something.
No, I welcome that. I mean, like, I listen to you and Jake, and there's, even if I might disagree with something, I was like, oh, I fucking get that point. I get that. It's not.
Yeah.
I think I just thought like with showbiz, like I was like, cause I had my first two, God, when the pandemic first started, I put something on tape, which was like a general for a network. And then I had, there's two shows that are coming back. And I put myself on tape with my manager for two shows this past week. And I was like, huh. I was like, okay. And I haven't really told my parents about it yet. I mean, I will eventually, but if I were to book it, I would probably have to, you know, maybe they would quarantine. I don't know what they would do, but I think SAG would be diligent with making sure that I was safe and everybody else on set was safe. You can't really, I don't know. You can't go ahead.
But did you see, so I didn't watch SNL, and actually SNL is a good example for this because
yeah,
I'm not a big fan, you know, I don't think I've watched yeah, it regularly in more than a decade,
mm-hmm,
but it is a thing where I don't sit here and I'm not like, oh, it's a bad show, because I understand that a lot of people really enjoy it, mm-hmm, you know, and I understand that me not liking something doesn't mean that it's good. And so it is a good example for me of like, yeah, for sure. When I criticize it, I do. And, you know, I'm criticizing clips that you see on the internet or whatever, not like the full show, because I don't watch the full show.
Yeah.
So it's actually why I don't speak on SNL so much. But when you said that it made you hopeful, I immediately want to know why, because I don't watch it. And yeah, when I have, I didn't feel that. Right.
Yeah.
So it is, I don't know, something where I wish people would see things more like that. Like, I want a whole picture of the thing, not just what I
yeah, got
from my experience and my view of it.
I would just say it just made me feel cautiously optimistic about yeah, things slowly coming back. Like, especially when Chris Rock is on there, it's like,
yeah,
I want to see his monologue. That's really all that I care totally, about. I don't really. And then when I found out Bill Burr is going to be on this coming week, and I was just like, I just want to see that fucking monologue.
The thing. That's why yeah, I'm going to watch those monologues, both of the ones you just said.
Yeah.
But for the most part, the only thing that bubbles up is like when somebody people either really hate a sketch or they yeah, either really love a sketch, then that pops up. But as far as like the safety thing, because mm-hmm, I did see a few pictures and clips already this morning
yeah,
of SNL, and they did do it inside the studio.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And everybody was wearing masks, but they were like all sitting right next to each other.
There was
no distancing, no, like, I don't know. And so at some point, you know, like, I guess we all have to make our own choice, but it does seem crazy that people are just being like, I saw somebody on Twitter call them like death tourists, because it's like, who goes to go get on an SNL lottery during a pandemic?
Well, they were apparently all first responders or essential workers. That, I mean, that's what Chris Rock said in his monologue. So I assumed,
isn't that worse?
I don't know.
Because aren't they the ones around sick people?
See, that's the thing, that's what I don't know. Like, that's why I said cautiously optimistic. And I'm thinking like, okay, if I'm going to work every day, like every other day, or I'm going into that office and they check our temperature, there's hand sanitizers, we wear a mask and everything. When we're at our desk, we don't have to wear them and stuff. But if you get up and you move around the office, you have to wear your fucking mask. I don't have a problem with that at all. I'm thinking if I book a gig that's a few thousand dollars and residuals coming in later, I kind of feel like I would do that, because it that's how I earn a living. And I don't know.
It does seem like sets where they're doing like production seem safe. Like everybody is wearing masks. There's like you said, temperature and hand sanitizer and distancing when the people are not directly being filmed, all of that stuff.
Yeah.
I'm questioning more, and I guess it comes from the stand-up thing, like the things with audiences. Like, I still have not been able to go to a rooftop show or a backyard show, to be honest with you, because the trapped feeling. Like, it's not like being in a park where I can approach the group from the area that I feel safe and I can walk away if it starts to get too crowded or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know the procedures for these people. Like, are we all taking an elevator together to get to this rooftop and then social distancing? That makes absolutely no sense. So I guess, I don't know. It depends just how paranoid you are and how much you, but I think for work purposes, it does seem safe for producing.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I mean, like, I still don't know what the fuck I'm doing about Thanksgiving with my parents.
Yeah.
And it's like, I just really don't, I don't know, because they're in their 70s. And it's like, I was like, but if I could maybe earn some money and send them some. Yeah. You know, they're not in dire need of anything, but it's like, if I can send my mother some shit from Amazon that would make her happy for 5 minutes, then I'll do that. But I want to hug my parents and shit.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, I don't know. So that's just where the dilemma lies with me. And, you know, 2 weeks ago when the Met canceled their next year's schedule, I was like, well, I don't know about theater. I don't know. And that, because that's like a precursor to. So the way that they said it on the news was like, you know, that kind of sets the tone for all live performances in New York City, whether it be stand up, theater, concerts, and all the shit that I like to do and produce. It's like, well, fuck, you know.
Yep.
Because my manager was like, he's like, you're an actor, you know, pushing that, like, he knows I love stand up and everything, but my degree is theater and all that. But he's like, you're an actor. You're just going to like pivot hard into this. And if I can book these things as a day player and build my resume that way, which I've been doing for the past 3 years, it's like, I'm fine with that. But
well, and Kristen, here's the thing. If you stop doing stand up for a year, even for 5 years, who is telling you that you can't do it?
That's
later?
True. Yeah, that's true. Nobody.
Like, worst case scenario is like, oh, what comics tell themselves and each other is like, you'll get rusty, right?
Yeah.
Oh, well, you got rusty. Like, it's not like you would be learning to ride a bike all the way from the start again.
Right.
It would be getting unrusty. And the way that you do that is you start getting up again and you start going through all the jokes again and you know what works because you understand how to be a stand-up.
Yeah.
Then you just start getting smooth again, comfortable on stage, working out new ideas, working on jokes, hanging out around people that you can talk to about your jokes.
Yeah.
It's a really weird badge of honor that comics, I think, have, or like this weird fear that if you stop even for a little minute, people are going to think you quit. Mm-hmm. And that if you quit, then that just means you're out forever. And it's like, no, man, you could be 60. You could come back and be 60 and be like, I haven't done stand-up in 20 years, and I feel like doing it now.
It's interesting because it's like, I will say this, like in corporate America, when a person that's like in their 50s or 60s, they retire and mm-hmm. they're like, oh, I've been here for 40 years. And I talk to them, I pull them to the side and like, how did you do it?
Yeah.
How did you stay? And they're just like, oh, exactly. You know, blah. And they'll say what they say. And then you listen to somebody, you're talking to a comic that, you know, I quit. How did you do it?
Yeah, exactly.
It's the same thing. And I don't want to quit stand up because I think there's still stuff that I want to say. And there's still, you know, yeah. Clark Jones or somebody had posted something about being in the city, in a new city you've never been in. And he was like, yeah, are you ever around in a new city and think, can I make these people laugh? I bet I could do that. I think about that shit all the time. Like if I'm in the movie theater, I was like, I wonder if they had just had a fucking show here. Could I make these people laugh? Could I make all these type of people? Could I make all these different people? Could I make them laugh? But yeah, I think that's a good, it's just, I think you're right. I think, you know, it's something that you kind of have to decide for yourself with regards to like, should I be doing this? Should I take this opportunity? Should I take this risk? And it's like, and then you kind of like, well, this is what I do. And it was fun. The process of putting on, like learning this part was fun. Learning those two parts was like, okay, yeah, I could do this. So we'll see. You got to book the fucking thing first, but
yeah.
Oh, before
sending good vibes, you'll get it.
Yeah, I hope so. It's like, see you on set. You know what they always, the other actors always say at an audition. God, I mean, elephant in the room. Before we get into showbiz, we did kind of pivot towards this, but like, how are you feeling? Like with we're recording this. In my intro, I'll probably say something, but this is like day. What would this be? Day two or three of Trump having COVID? And
oh my God,
how did that? When did you find out?
Can I tell you? Oh, hilarious. I went to bed early on Thursday night.
As did I.
I'm one of the people who missed it. Oh, so we missed it, right?
Yes.
But I did the very healthy thing of waking up in the morning and rolling over and grabbing my phone immediately.
Yeah.
And I see I have a text message from Samantha Ruddy.
I know
and
of
I look
her,
at the
yeah.
text. Yeah. And it just says, Luisa, wake up. Trump has COVID. You need to be online for this.
Oh, man.
And then I look, and of course, you know, now it's like the morning and we're getting the news. And, you know, I think it's great. I don't believe in decorum. You know, I think
sure.
that all these ideas of decorum and civility and Christian values in this sense are all ways in which we are told not to dissent against
mm-hmm.
the status quo or oppressive powers or whatever. So no, there should not, you know, it's crazy that there were liberals who were just like literally up until this week acting yeah. like Trump is an existential threat to America. He's going to ruin everyone, like everything we stand for. All these people have lost their lives already and more will lose their lives. And then the next day they're like, but I hope you get better, but I'm praying for you. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
So literally you're praying for this man not to die so he can live and kill more people. That's what you're saying.
I feel you.
So I'm not down with the decorum and the like false prayers and fucking supposed higher road, because it's not taking the high road. Wishing for a maniac like this to live longer is not the higher road. So I feel like, yeah, let America have it. Let us enjoy it. Those of us who are really happy, you know, it's a nice karmic retribution, right? Because he obviously didn't care about COVID and all the people that died and didn't role model the mask thing, didn't do anything as president to do anything about it. That all said, and I'm still enjoying it, and I still have my fingers crossed for him to die. But I think more than likely what will happen is he won't die. Because he is also not, you know, how many of us had friends and family members who were sick for 6 weeks in their apartment by themselves,
mm-hmm.
you know, like barely able to feed themselves, barely able to like literally I had a friend who was like, you have to call me every 6 hours so that somebody knows if I die, you know, like,
yeah. Wow.
Horrible. So this man will go now and be on our tax dollar in getting the best medical care. So he's probably going to be fine. And what's going to be worse is that he'll be like a bigger asshole on the other side of this and be like, see, only the weak die. And I told you that masks were stupid and whatever. So unless he dies, it's probably not good for the country. But I'll be like the worst person on earth and say that I'm really hoping like at least, I don't know, like 6 or 7 Republicans go down with this. It would be great.
Well, and there you have it. Yeah, I mean, I do not, I don't have any hope.
You don't want to wish on people?
Yeah, yeah, it's I like, and, it. I'm not trying to, because I said this on another podcast.
Yeah.
I was just like, you know, I'm not going to party on it, but like, a lot of those tweets were funny. And I saw the post that he had about, somebody posted him, you know, making fun of Hillary when she got pneumonia and talking shit about her. And
yeah.
McCain, people being dead. So he has no, I think he's, you know, unfit to be president. I voted for Hillary. You know, if Bernie would have won, I would have voted for him. I had no, I think as a black person, and I don't know if you can speak on this as a woman of color. I think brown people and people of color in general, some of them make the pragmatic choice to vote for who is gonna like fulfill their needs in the best way possible, even though that person it could be not could maybe be a piece of shit. One, right. You know, because I just really. This both side shit is just, I'm kind of losing respect for people that say this both side shit. And it's kind of, it makes me sad that I have to like do that. So, you know, it's just, cause I thought he was a fucking joke. I thought it was a joke 4 or 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I didn't think that it could ever happen. And then it did. It was just like, wow. I still did what I was supposed to do. In primaries and, you know, even during a non-presidential election year, it's just like, ugh, you know?
Yeah, same, you know, and no, we'll vote for the lesser evil and all that stuff. But I hate to say like I'm an atheist, but like thinking of things outside of any like, Christian morality, because I do think that that's the problem here for some people is like, oh, you don't want to wish ill on one person, right? Because that would make you a bad person. But it is a problem overall in America whenever we choose to put an individual life over all the people, you know?
Yes, yeah.
And to me, it's exactly the same thing as like the way I had a friend who I feel bad because then he like told me that, you know, that he thinks his mom. He's a person of color, okay? So, and his mom voted for Trump.
Yeah.
And he was like, oh, well, I think that she's getting closer to, like, not voting for Trump this time and voting for Biden. But the last time he talked to her, she was like, well, you know, I know he's a horrible person, et cetera, et cetera, but I'm still pro-life, right?
Yeah.
So this is a person who is thinking of this one potential child that could be born one day, right? And they're being like, well, I wouldn't want to kill any baby.
Yeah.
By voting for this person, you're killing people who already exist, who already don't have health care, who are already in cages at the border, who are already being deported to countries they've never seen, or who are already being buried in debt until they have no possible future. Like, how is it moral for you to say I must stand on the ground of defending this one potential like imaginary life,
right,
and not care about all these people? And so to me it's the same thing with Trump. You are thinking of him as a human being, and when we think of human beings, obviously nobody wants to kill or, you know, wish death or harm upon a human being. But this person is not a human being. This person is a person who by his sheer existence ruins other people's lives. The Christian thing to do would be to hope to hell that he dies as soon as possible.
How much of that do you think is the mob, like coming under the, I don't know what you call it. Is it a sickness or the
like thing mob of mentality?
Well, no, just like the model minority, like people like your friend. Like, is that, can you suffer from that? Like this pursuit of whiteness that you're never really gonna get unless you're white.
I for sure think that the pursuit of whiteness thing is there, especially for non-white people who can pass.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
However, I think that this is more like. It's not like it's what you were saying of like mitigating the potential negative results towards themselves and their loved ones.
Yeah.
So because the system has never worked for us and because it was never made for us, I think the problem that we have is a problem of hopelessness where we just don't believe that there is a possibility of another system.
Mm-hmm.
So we tell ourselves the best that we can do is vote for this lesser evil.
Yes.
And maybe it is what, it is the easiest thing to do, I guess, but it is not the only thing to do.
Hmm.
Or it's like the bare minimum that we should do, vote for the lesser evil.
Right.
But also involve yourself in doing something to change everything else. Be in mutual aids, support other like down ballot candidates that will make local changes around you.
Right.
Even in my lifetime, I've been really, I think I get like, I have a bit of nihilism from the Gen X people in my life that, mm-hmm. that meant a lot to me growing up and such. And I tend towards hopelessness, I think. And these last few years, despite all the bad stuff, the whole thing with Bernie and even Ocasio-Cortez, who's also not perfect, because here's mm-hmm. the thing, no politician is perfect.
Mm-hmm.
The very fact that there are more working class women, non-white people, immigrants who are being like, I will get involved. Like the fact that Ilhan Omar is like, yeah, sure, I will take death threats every single day to try to change this country for my children who now live here. That is brave. You know, that's amazing. Yeah. That's something that I honestly didn't picture when I was in my 20s. Like I didn't ever think that our governing body would be more than the old white men and the white, old rich white women who support them because it's in their own interest to keep them in power.
Right.
So, you know, slowly, but there is change. There is something happening more than just, I'll just vote for the lesser evil. But to answer your question, yeah, I think in these cases, it is more of supporting, it's more about supporting, I guess, hoping that they will be the least, like get the least bad case scenario, you know?
Yeah, I think that's true. I mean, I think what you just said about, you know, what else are you going to do? You do that. You vote for the lesser of the two evils, and because it's a two party system, and then you try to make the world a better place than when you die. You know,
which I would tell you, for those of you who are artists, it includes dealing with those subjects in your art.
Yes. Yeah.
It includes changing the minds of people around you, even if you don't think you can change the world. Literally, by definition, being an artist means you do think that you have something to say and that it's worth hearing.
Mm-hmm.
So why wouldn't you use that as a tool to engage also the people around you in what you would hope is a better world, you know, a vision for a better world?
Yeah. You know, that's what I think about. Like you think about like writing a love interest for this character in this thing that I'm working on. I kind of want to talk to a woman about it, and I'm thinking like before I even fucking do anything, it's like, well, is she going to be like, well, she's got to be like this. I don't want her to be a manic pixie dream girl. I want her to be black. I want her to have her own shit. I don't want her to need this other character, but I just want her to be an entity on her own. And I want her to be strong and I want her to be this, but then it's like, you got to just fucking do it and then figure it out. You know, but I think I think if I approach it the way, because I've written stuff before, but I think I want, if I put as much thought into it as I do my stand up, I think I'll be okay. And that's not, and then somebody can make a pass and look at it.
Yeah, that's what I was going to tell you. I mean, first step is get it out of your head.
Yeah.
Thoughtfully, obviously, and it sounds like you're doing that.
Yeah.
And then run it by people who you trust. And then not also women, people.
Exactly. That's who I want. Yeah. The one I reached out to, she never reached out back, but I'm sure she's busy and stuff. But that was the first person I reached out to was a woman. Was a broad.
That's good. Yeah. And I mean, it's also good to get men's point of view because you want to know how they read your presentation of this relationship and the dynamic and all of that. But in terms of writing for someone different than yourself, it's good to get that feedback from somebody who has the experience.
Yeah. I was trying to think, you made me think of something else before we get into this. But that's when you have, when I have people like you on, it's just like, well, fuck. Yeah, we're supposed to talk about this thing. And fuck. I don't know. But
and then at the end, we just have to be like, oh, yeah. And by the way, Pen 15.
Pen 15, that's all right. You know? Let's just get into it. Because there was a thing that I wanted to, I think, you know, that just happens on the show. Whatever. So you were tweeting about Pen 15, and I was like, ooh, because I always love the discussions that you and Jake have on the show, especially when it's stuff that I know a little bit about. Mm-hmm. And I will say that I was jealous that Brandon Collins booked the show before me, before I got on.
But actually, not to make this about business, but I was thinking of asking you to come over to talk about Lovecraft Country. Are you watching that?
I am watching it. Yeah.
That's why I thought that I saw you tweet about it, and I like it, but I'm confused. Mm-hmm. And I have opinions, but also I feel like it would be essential to have the point of view of a Black man specifically, I think.
Sure.
The show is kind of very dealing with like the topics of Black masculinity, mm-hmm. and their relationship with their family, lots of different things that I think I can speak on as a person looking from the outside, but it really just leaves me wondering, like, people, like, let's say people who grew up in the South and people who had a grandfather who was in the was into science fiction or something like that.
Yeah.
And had more of a closer experience to what's being depicted here, how they feel about it. So yeah, I would love to have you on.
Okay. Well, I'm down. You say less. I'm in. That is a show, and that's kind of, I've been having a conversation with a friend about that, who was really into sci-fi, mm-hmm. and it's like, oh, this is really cool, and he's a Black dude, and it's just like, and then you look at the critiques of these things, and it's like, well, is it because you don't, like Black people that are critiquing it, it's like, mm-hmm. yeah, you kind of, the horrors of slavery is enough, and you don't like the civil rights, it's just like, oh, this is, it. It's like, oh, it's Black trauma. It's Black trauma, and society feeds on that. And it's just,
yeah.
I think it's kind of, it. Yes, but I think this is just a show.
Not just that, but that's also the legacy of science fiction.
Yeah,
is to deal with those things that are, I guess, like traumatic, mm-hmm. so on a social level and on an individual level. And I don't know, it's the same thing as Watchmen. A lot of people, obviously didn't like Watchmen, but then I personally thought it was good that they, like a lot of people didn't know about Tulsa before this fucking show.
Yeah.
So is that not good that now more people know about Tulsa? You know, I don't know.
I thought that I love that show. I thought it was really good. And I'm not a big graphic novel guy. Yes, I will I'll go see all those Marvel movies, but my home is these fucking art house movies that you have to, wait a couple weeks, that premiere in New York and LA. Like, that's the shit that I like. But I'm down. Say, now that you have booked me on that, I will throw.
This conversation is done. That was the goal.
That's
of the whole
goal. This was all a subterfuge to get on your show.
Love it.
No, that's perfect. So I guess we can just start with the, like, 3 days ago, you tweeting about Pen 15, and what I think because I have you on here, I guess we'll read our tweet exchange and mm-hmm. or your thread basically, and then I'll just have you say like what the show, like tell everybody what the show's about. I talked about it a couple weeks ago, but I want to make sure this thread, that I get all this thread, because every time I try to read something I hate that. Okay, here it is. Okay. this is like in reference to season 2 on Pen 15, which premiered a couple weeks ago on Hulu. And this is you talking about Mara. Ari Mara on Pen 15. She is a spoiled girl who is mean/manipulative/dishonest to cover up for her own insecurities, and who both the main characters and the audience of the show insist on befriending/loving because they either identify with her or with falling for similar people in their past. Sad face. More is toxic. More is toxic. Some of you are parentheses still Moras. Some of you still think Moras are your friend, so do not at me. Also question mark, the whole preteens as love interest of grown actors with sexy scenes and everything. Okay, well, we can talk about that another time. So anyway, the show does a good job of showing us this character familiar to all of us who were preteen girls. But then, like, people, the audience, love her, idolize her, still miss the point of watching back as adults. Nostalgia is bad for your brain. You cannot convince me otherwise. And then I jump in. I was like, oh, can you come back on my podcast to talk about this and other current events? And you said yes. And here we are. How did people are loving Mora? Is that
yeah? Well, so it's kind of, I guess, in a like, ooh, like we like the mean girl, like kind of like mean girl thing, you know, where they think it's funny. And so this tweet was actually triggered because of the debate. After the debates,
okay,
the presidential debates, the sure. next day, Mora was a meme. Like, these liberals were passing around memes of Mora being like, well, if she had moderated the debate, you know, it wouldn't have gone like that, you know, wow. with this, like, and, you know, I'm not stupid. I know that it's a joke.
Sure, of course.
You know, but I just kept seeing this, like, idea being circulated that there is something cool about this character, or, like, the fact that she's scary is cool. And it's like,
wow.
Yeah. And so, you know, I think, yeah, she's scary. And what you feel about it being scary, especially women who I saw say this, is like, what you're feeling is that you got put back into the mental space of you as a 14-year-old meeting a girl like this who you know to be scared of because she's going to manipulate you. You
yeah.
know? And like, maybe you didn't know how to put those words into it, but like, you sense that she is like a stronger personality than you. And it's like the beginning of this inability to tell, is this person stronger than me for a good reason and I should like look up to that and emulate it? Or is this person stronger than me in a malicious, manipulative way, you mm-hmm. know? And I should get away from it, or I should stand up for myself. And I think that's like a lot of what being a preteen girl is about with okay. these relationships with other girls, where there's like passive aggression and like lying to impress each other, all that stuff that you see with this character of Mora. And so I was torn because it's an excellent character. It's
yeah.
like written very well. Like I said, almost everyone that I've talked to has had an experience of at least one Mora in their life.
Mm-hmm.
And which is like, it's not just that she's mean. It's that she's mean and you continue to be her friend.
Kind of right? racist too.
Yeah. Oh, everything. Racist, classist, just shitty, like yeah. a shitty little person, you know?
Yeah.
And yet both of the characters on the show, like, even, you know, sorry to spoil it for anyone, but the arc of the show for season two is basically that this really great friendship between two girls, all of a sudden a third girl gets inserted.
Mm-hmm.
And even though she's like mean and shitty to one or both of them at different times, they insist on still hanging out with this person. And there's a dynamic of like the one girl who is like starting to suspect that this isn't cool and I don't like this. But that manifests as like her being jealous and trying to like keep her friend to herself, et cetera.
Yeah.
And then the other one being like, well, she's just a little different. I don't understand why you're reading too much into this. And then that starts to like separate their friendship, right?
Yeah.
So it's an extremely well depicted character. It's something that I think we've probably never seen in anything else, because even Mean Girls didn't have
that layer.
Yeah, they didn't have that layer of like, you actually want to be like or want to be friends with this girl. And I mean, they did at first, but then they very quickly make it obvious that it was bad, right?
Right.
And so what was crazy to me is that this is like full grown adults who are watching this show, and what they're experiencing is nostalgia, right? They're mm-hmm. experiencing this like revisiting of their past shown to them in this mirror that almost perfectly mirrors their experience. And they feel such joy and pleasure at being seen, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
That they uncritically accept every part of this show as being good.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as I said earlier, I don't think it is possible for you, or I don't think it is possible for all art to be all good. And I don't think it is fair, I guess, or efficient of humans to not critique art thoroughly. And so, you know, I think I, not to speak for the writers, but I would say that the reason that they made a show like this is to illustrate a very particular experience that is not illustrated in media very often. You know? Yeah. And to be honest about it as much as they can, in the way that they are, like, you know, they don't glorify themselves as preteens. They show themselves as humiliated and silly and all that stuff. But instead, what everybody's doing, instead of like looking at it as adults and being like, damn, that is what I should learn. You know, like if I were a parent and I watched Pen 15, this shit would remind me to have a conversation with my daughter about what friendship is really supposed to be like, and about how it is appropriate and not appropriate to communicate with your friends, and what kind of behaviors you accept from people and you don't accept from people. But instead, these are full grown adults with children being like, oh my God, Mara is so cool. And I'm like,
yeah, that's a very vapid take. Cause I thought, like, you know, I'm going to be upfront. Like, I even said it on, like, I really, like, I think I don't want to say, how do I do this? You can check me. you can check me on this.
I will go.
I think Maya Erskine is a star.
Yeah.
I think Anna Conkle's good. It's a good show. She's really, I think they're both, Maya Erskine is a fucking star. I think, cause I rewatched the first episode before we got on, mm-hmm. and, that vulnerability, that access to that vulnerability, like, yes, it's goofy. She's got this bowl cut and she's, mm-hmm. it's just a fucking, it's an award worthy performance.
Totally. And
it made me fall in love with her. Like it's just, I'm, and as a guy, one of the things I know about me, like with women, I am attracted to women that are artistically challenged like that. Like, you know, artistically talented, not challenged, artistically talented. And like, they can do this stuff. Yeah. She's playing a 13-year-old, but then I saw her in this movie called Plus One. That was like a rom-com. And I think you can find it on Hulu now, where I'm like, oh, she's a fucking star. And I've seen her in all these different roles, but this is there's a certain sweetness to both characters, but to, a little more to Erskine, where it's just like, God damn, like she's really taking this on, and you can feel for her when they tell her she's the ugliest character. And I think season one was kind of about her, mm-hmm. and the darkness that they took with season two, where it was like, oh, they're really going for some shit here. Like the closeted gay kid, the divorce that her parents are going through.
Yeah.
It's just like, this is some Transformer shit. This is more than meets the eye.
Yeah.
Like they're not fucking around.
Yeah. My favorite part of season two actually is, the relationships with their mothers.
Yes. The episode where they're trying on clothes and stuff.
Yeah, and the thing is that episode was like the culmination, but the relationship with the mother's thing is like a thing that wove all the way through the entire season,
mm-hmm.
where we got to go, because if you remember, I believe season two starts with Maya getting ready for the first day of school, and she's like, just like her hair was perfect.
The bowl cut,
and then her mom gave her a bowl cut against her will, basically.
Yeah.
And sets the whole tone of how her school year is going to go, because now she looks the same as last year and whatever.
Well, it's the same. It's the same school year. It's the same school. Yeah, because they have the dance. The dance is the end of season one. And then the next episode, the first episode of season two, is them just being at a pool party, and they're talking about what happened at the dance. So that it was only a couple weeks ago.
I don't really. I'm gonna have to rewatch it, because I thought it was the pool and all of that was like the summer. So, because then, do you remember that it starts with them talking on the phone with each other, And it is this like catch up that you used to do right before the school year starts, where you're like, everything that happened in the summer,
I might be wrong.
Saw it.
I mean,
I could see how, because then how did her hair grow out?
Her hair's grown back out in season two?
Yeah, in season two, Maya starts the season with like longer hair and bangs. And then okay. She's like telling Anna, like, do you think I look different? Do you think I look better? And then the morning of going back to school, she's like, well, I'm just going to do a little clip like right here. And she messes up her hair. So then her mom is like, here, I'll fix it really quick, and pulls out the bowl okay. And gives her the bowl haircut again. So I do think it was in between. It's a new school year.
Okay. You know? I just want to make sure.
We'll double check, because obviously I'm not 90% on, I'm like 80% on it. But it seems like it because of the whole hair growing out thing. And then like the pool party thing was the first time that they were seeing those boys in the summer, you know, after the dance
maybe.
Thing happened.
Okay.
But yeah, but anyway, the mom, you know, like very on the first episode of season two, like just sets this tone. It's like a blip of a thing, because I don't even think she comes back in episode one, but it's like by giving you this haircut, she puts you back in the mentality and back into the mental space of last year's first day. you know? And so it's like, oh, whatever two steps forward she took, she goes back, right? So then the relationship with the mom is contentious almost all of season two, where she does start being like slightly disrespectful to her and like saying mean things, like. But then it ends on that episode, like the shopping one was the I guess the apex of being mean to each other and growing up. But then when Maya and the other girl are being like, they're ostracizing her a little bit and she's starting to feel like she's losing her friend. And then they start making fun of her at school and saying she's a slut and all of that.
Yeah.
And she's just dejected. And then we get that bathtub scene with her mom, where like her mom, who is an immigrant, who probably doesn't have the same experience as Maya has, and who has been treated like shit by Maya for
yes.
the whole season, she just like automatically puts that aside, and they have the most tender moment where she tells her like, you're beautiful and you're great, and like no matter who's making you feel bad, you are great, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's just, what a beautiful depiction, I guess, of the rockiness of that adolescent, pre-adolescent relationship that girls have with their mother.
Right. Yeah. It was such a, because I was mad at both of them for acting that way to their parents. Like, I was like, you're being a fucking ass. You're being assholes. And you know that's Maya Erskine's real mom.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's her real mother.
Oh, that's so cute.
Yeah. And it's just like, it is, that was just a really sweet scene. And she goes down and throws that tantrum in the laundry room where her mother's, you know, working and stuff. And she's like, that girl's no good. Like, her mom clocked it off the rip. She was like, the kid's not good.
And that's what I mean. I think that's what irks me is that, so in the show, the mother immediately is able to tell, this person is hurting my child.
Right? Yeah.
But adults in real life are watching this show being like, Mora's awesome. I'm going to get a tattoo of Mora.
What's the word? You make me think of this because it's like, what's the word? Is it just like they're being dismissive? It's not that they're not being dismissive of it, but they're just being reductive. And I guess that's what I want to say. Like, it's just like,
I would call it uncritical, I guess. And so this is my problem, right? It's like what I mentioned earlier is like, there are people who will be like, well, you know, sometimes you just want to enjoy something and you don't want to have to think about it too much.
Yeah.
And I understand that, you know, there are certainly things that I watch and I enjoy and I don't think about too much, or things that I think about too much and I still enjoy, even though I find bad things on it.
Yeah.
About it, you know?
Yeah.
What is bad to me, I guess, is when somebody else points out to you that something you like is problematic or has this other aspect that you hadn't considered, it's not an insult against you.
Yeah.
Like, it's not,
right.
You know, like if I watched a movie with you, Chris, and we walk out and I'm like, I didn't get it, or I thought it was about this. And then you tell me, actually, because you don't know about Hitchcock, you didn't realize that this thing was happening and this other thing. I would be happy to learn. I would be like, oh, okay. Like, I didn't understand the context clues because I didn't have this certain kind of knowledge about film, or I hadn't seen the prequels or whatever it may be.
And you could still not like the shit, even if you did know that.
Still not like it. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. But it is this thing. I don't like to be a nerd. There is, I want to say it's Hindu. It's a Hindu parable.
Be a nerd. It's fine.
Yeah. I'm like, I'm sorry if I screw this up, but it's an Eastern parable, let's say, that is about, it's like four monks who are blind get asked to describe an elephant, right? So the four blind monks each puts their hand on one part of the elephant, except then they start describing what an elephant looks like, except that each one of them is touching a different part. So there's one that's touching the elephant's tail, and one that's touching the elephant's tusk, and another one that's touching the elephant's belly, and the other one is touching the elephant's ear. So as they describe what an elephant is, they're all four describing something totally different, right?
Yeah.
And yet, every part that they are describing is part of an elephant, right? So the idea here being, if we start to understand that our vision is limited and that it can only grasp that which is within our field of vision, meaning within our intellectual capacity, within our experience, within our cultural knowledge, then we know nothing I ever see is the full picture. And that's okay, because nothing anybody sees is the full picture. Mm-hmm. But if we talk to each other more and we ask the open questions of like, how do you see this? How do you see your side of the elephant? Then both of us walk away with a more complete picture of the elephant. Right?
Yeah.
And I feel like that's all that art criticism is you know, even if you're an artist, yeah, that's good. If you're an artist and you're making art, you are still only seeing part of that elephant, right? Because you're only seeing your intentions, and you're only seeing the history of what your like art performance history is, what your vision and your voice, etc., are. But the one thing you are not seeing is how the people who are seeing your art see it.
Yeah.
Right? So you should want to hear from them what their side of the elephant looks like, because if it's not what you intended to put into that art, then you need to rework this, right? Or if it has something in it that you never perceived or like imagined could be there, that could make your art deeper and more meaningful in the future, right?
Yeah.
So all that to say, yeah, let's all like look at the different parts of the elephant. And like with Pen 15, that's, you know, it's a great show because it is kind of like putting together. How do you feel about how boys are represented, or men?
I think that's about right, but I think they did a good job. I think like that, you thinking about like the interior life of a kid, you know, like even like I think about like eighth grade, that movie that came, the what's my man's name, God,
Bo Burnham,
which I thought was was great. Like the. I remember like 7th, 8th grade. I remember feeling some kind of way about girls that I could, I don't know. Like, I think they did a good job, but the boys are just kind of like, they're not in touch with their feelings that way.
Yeah.
And then I was a sensitive kid. So I'd like to think that I would have picked up on those vibes if Maya liked me. You know what I mean? Or but I don't think that I would have. I think to some degree, I'd like to think that I would be. I was probably like the kid that ended up really liking Maya. I was more like him, even though he had his where he was kind of making fun of him. I did that because if I did like a girl, I would make fun of her. And I would push her and chase her, but I wouldn't be like like physically like fucking bitch. But I would I would like let the girl chase me around, and I would hit her and stuff, but not in a mean school.
No, I totally know. That's why I'm like that's why I asked, you know, because I think I've mostly talked to women about the show, and it's all mostly very positive. But I haven't really asked a man how he felt about the boy experience being represented. And like, I do think about it a lot, because one of the things that I saw myself in on the show is, you remember at the beginning of season one, both of the girls, they were like close friends with the group of boys.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So as a girl who was like a weird artsy tomboy, I remember distinctly that period where like I always hung out with a bunch of boys, and maybe there was like one or two other girls who were also tomboys like me, you know? Mm-hmm. And then something changes where all of a sudden it's like these walls start coming up where you are like awkward around each other. And it's not just all sexual, or, you know, people love to be like, oh, it's hormones and whatever. And it's like, it's not that. It's not that we all like suddenly are horny and are like trying to bone each other or anything like that. It's like a sudden awareness of how the world is different for us. And we have to start thinking about, should I be acting and looking more like these other girls so that I'm quote unquote normal? And then you're like, no, I like my friends and I like hanging out with the boys and doing these things with the boys. But then you notice the boys, they like those girls. They like those other girls. And then you're like, shit, well, maybe I'm not like a girl then. And that's bad. And then watching this show, I kind of got to see the boy side of that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where I think the boy that liked Maya, he was like the best example of this, where he did the like making fun of her. But then she suddenly starts to care more about, I guess, what we would call girl stuff and get away from him. And then he starts to experience that, like, well, that does this mean that I lose my friend Maya if I like Maya as a girl? And it has been a recurring thing, I think, even into adulthood, right? Where we all have to like figure out whether your interest in me is platonic or is it romantic or is it just sexual, and therefore you don't respect me. And it's like the beginning of this awkward forever thing that men and women will have, that I thought was represented so well in the show. But then in season two, we get to that scene at the dance, I think, where they go into a closet and they let that boy feel them up.
That's season one. That's the end of season one.
No, really?
Yep. That's the end of season one. The dance is the end.
Oh, you're right. Yeah. You're right. Because I'm thinking in season two, they're like, it's flashbacks to that.
No.
Right.
Well, I don't think they flashback, but season one is the dance episode. That's season one, episode 10.
Yeah. Right. So in season two, they just talk about it because now everybody else knows, because Maya told people, but silly.
Right.
But it's so weird because, man, I did not like that scene.
When he felt him up? Yeah, I didn't care for that either.
Here's the thing, dude. Not to be an asshole, but like, if this show was two men in their 30s,
you can't do that.
A cast full of children, no way you have an actual 14-year-old girl rub your bulge over your pants.
No, because it's,
you
just
know what I mean?
It's different. It's class. It's class things, and I'm glad you brought that up, because it. How did you feel about like the season one, like that Wild Things episode? I thought it was like they had a, when they did that kiss.
Yeah.
It was, she, like, Anna Conkle was kissing an adult guy.
Right.
So, like, they got away with that. But and it made me think about, like, the, I think that's just a societal men-women thing. Like, you could not do that if you were a dude. And I just accepted that. I wouldn't want to do the shit, you know, anyway.
No, I know, but I guess I'm saying, like, I didn't think it was a good moment in the show. Like, I'm not saying it's unfair that men can't, you know, because
how come we can't do that shit?
Yeah. Because actually, didn't we have, you remember Interview with a Vampire?
Mm.
Kirsten Dunst was like 13 or some shit, and she kissed Brad Pitt.
Oh, shit.
There was a makeout scene. Well, I don't know if it was like full makeout or whatever, but I remember that it was like a thing. That, like, it was so funny. People would ask her in interviews in the 90s, like, oh, so how was it kissing Brad Pitt? And she's like 13, dude. And I was like,
yeah,
what the fuck?
Well, that's pre-Me Too.
It's crazy.
And they don't give a fuck about that.
It's creepy. So I did feel like, you know, I guess because working as a producer and stuff, and like, I can't not picture the production scene, you know, the behind the scenes situation here.
Yeah.
Where two adult women and I guess an adult director and adult cast crew people are standing around taking multiple takes of a 13-year-old boy rubbing nipples of 30-year-old women.
Yeah. Yeah, that was kind of like, because, you know, before we started, I told you about that guy, that actor, Chris Lilly, who's from Australia. He has had a show called Summer Heights High, where he dress up as all these different characters. And he would do basically the same thing that these that Erskine and Conkle are doing. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, it plays a little different. It's a little more, and then maybe it's that UK overseas humor where it's a little more acerbic. And yeah. It's just like, kind of like, you kind of like, it's a little cringe. And then some stuff is like, yo, is this shit racist? Like, cause he did Case Dunn, he's done characters. He's got quite a few series doing this. And he would do blackface and he had a little curly hair, and the Tongan community did not like this one character that he did. So I was like, I think Pen 15, like that scene is very questionable, but mm-hmm. like with regards to another show that I've seen that you could easily make comparisons to, it's like, it's tame
not
as fuck.
Bad.
Yeah, it's not as bad. And artistically, what I think, and I'm not trying to shit on that man's show or whatever, but it, because yeah. I watched a couple of his shows, you know, and it was quite funny to interesting to me when you talk about the sweetness in some of these portrayals that Conkle yeah. and Erskine are doing. It's like Lily's character that everybody for the most part thought was racist was when he played this kid Jonah, the Tongan kid that's in a prep school, and he's like he's like a bad, you know, quote unquote bad kid, but there was a lot of sweetness in that character, and that was the character that had the most to me. You know, just even like making the generalization of what I remember from a show 2 to 3 years ago, it's like that character had like some of the sweetest moments, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I guess that's why this scene in Pen 15 stuck out to me mm-hmm. because, you know, I'm certainly not being like, oh my God, cancel them and like this is a crime or anything like that. But it seemed like it did not fit with the voice of the show. Mm-hmm. The decision making, right? Because if the entire show is about sweetly and honestly and comedically exposing the difficulty, I guess, of being a preteen, and I guess they specifically mean girls, but I think they mean preteens in general, and it's about them like being like, let's explore this time when we were so awkward and our bodies were feeling strange and our relationships with each other and with ourselves were in question and shifting. And then here you are, your coworker is literally a preteen who is literally going through the things that you are depicting in your show.
Yeah.
But you are putting him in this situation.
Right.
Like, that's fucking weird. I'm like, you know, like the whole show is premised on this whole, like, we are speaking with a sensitivity towards this experience that you have never seen before. And they are.
Yeah.
But then the way that you treated your actors in certain cases, yikes. Like you're giving them a traumatic thing to talk about in therapy one day, maybe.
And,
I don't know.
And then that kid might be a little older because they do cast up sometimes. But
dude,
like,
I looked it up.
How old is that kid? How old is he?
Because you know what? Also, here's what's messed up is that I was there being like, this kid is super cute. I think I have a crush on him, you know, and I'm like 39 and I'm there like, I would have definitely been into this kid when I was 14.
But that's a little, it's a little more accept. Cause I had a problem telling you and even mm-hmm. saying on my podcast that I thought I really fell in love with Maya Erskine
playing a 13 year old. Yeah, exactly. So I'm watching this being like, fuck, I kind of have like a TV crush on this kid. And then immediately my thought was what you said, which is like, oh, but they're probably like at least like 18, right? Mm-hmm. This is, you know, it's adults playing kids. And especially if they would put him in a scene like this, 14 years old, Chris.
Ooh, ooh. Well,
that actor. Yeah.
And then society would be like, fucking hey, man, 32, fucking hey, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know. It's weird. It's just something to think about. I don't necessarily like, I don't think it's damning of the show or the production team or anything like that. But it just was a weird off-putting moment that I think didn't really follow with what the show is trying to portray.
It's a double standard that we don't often talk about.
Yeah.
And you're actually making me, and then it's I'm going to blame you for me trying to stumble through finding it if I can before this podcast is over. There was some movie, and I'll probably have to text it to you or fucking say it in the intro. There was a movie, I think it might have been called Miss Fletcher or something, where this woman who's a hot blonde, she's married and she's in some Midwest town. and she has an affair with a young high school kid. And it's like, that's what the movie's about. And it's like, it's a double standard that we just don't talk about a lot. And it's just like, you don't know what that does to that those boys, because they are affected, even though, you know, she's fucking hot.
Yeah.
But
yeah, because also, you know, thinking about like what the role was of that scene in the show, it was unnecessary. Mm-hmm. Because they could have accomplished exactly the same thing with doing like they walk into the closet and then they walk out of the closet thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
And then the next season, the fact that Maya starts being the one trying to explain herself and giving everybody all the details.
Right.
That would have been enough of her just saying what happened in that closet.
Mm-hmm.
We did not need to see this. I don't know. It's not, it's not as big of a deal, I guess, as it might be making it sound right now. It just seems like it was an incongruous choice.
I think you're just speaking to something that, you know, that we just don't really talk about at all. And it's not, it's just because, you know, people are talking about, like, there's this movie that Zendaya did with John David Washington, Denzel's son. And he's 35. Zendaya's 24, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, I can't, that age gap is blah, 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 blah. But I was
but that's stupid.
I think that's stupid, too, because it's like, she agreed to do it. She's 24.
She's an adult.
She's fucking legal, bro.
Yeah. No, she's an adult. And like, I don't know. I do think all the conversations people have been having recently about age gaps and stuff, like, it is kind of melodramatic. It is, you know, like, you do have to accept that people are, and you know what's messed up is, like, there are plenty of people who are dating a completely age appropriate or exactly the same age person who manipulates them, who abuses them emotionally or mentally, who financially abuses them. People can be shitty to each other regardless of our ages, you know. Age gaps are only problematic in a situation where there is a power imbalance and where one person is using that power imbalance to manipulate the other. And I don't think that in a situation where you're working, like Zendaya and Denzel's son, where you both agreed to do a job that has a limited time in which you will work with each other.
Mm-hmm.
That's not an abusive situation.
Right. You know, and they sought him out. She and the director sought him out. So, I mean,
that's not the same thing. Just like, I honestly don't think that what I'm saying about Pen 15, anybody abused this kid or anything like that.
No.
If anything, I'm just saying like the images that we're putting out into the world, like it doesn't make sense to sexualize a 13-year-old boy for comedy, but you wouldn't do that to a girl.
Yeah, I feel you. It's kind of like, you know, it's definitely questionable, because I thought the way I was like, how are they going to get around it like they did with that Wild Things episode?
Yeah,
because I was like, I like this. And then I was like, OK, there's this tension. And it's like, OK, that's how they dealt with it. OK.
Yeah, you know what? You can fail. Like, that's what art is about. Some things hit and some things miss. And, you know, maybe to them, they don't even think that that was a miss. They feel like the awkwardness of that scene was what they were going for.
Yeah.
And I'm sure some people read it that way as it's good, but I can't help but be like, there is something icky and uncomfortable about this.
I feel you. No, I feel you 100%. Yeah. And I think it's more than just... That show is more to be, that's something that actually, if you have a adolescent kid, that maybe you could watch that with them and talk to them about it. You know, like, that's one of those shows. It's just not, I think you're right. I don't think that show should just be reduced to fucking Mara. Yeah. You know, like, she's definitely a great villain, but I think there's more to it than that, you know? And I think it's interesting to me, like, I mean, I guess this is just, there's just so much shit on TV right now that it's hard to really give stuff that really stands out, you know, like you mentioned Lovecraft Country, that's definitely prestige television.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like Pen 15, Hulu is not, you know, even though it's becoming a network that's, you know, garnering, you know, praise and stuff, but it's not HBO, you know.
Yeah, exactly. It's still not considered prestige TV.
But it's damn good though. Like, I was just kind of I was, you know, like that show, that season two, I finished in a whole day. Like, you know, it's only 30 minutes or whatever, but binging that was just like, fuck it. And it kind of took me on a ride that I wasn't expecting, you know?
Yeah, I love it. Overall, I think it's really, really great. Yeah. Have you seen Little Fires Everywhere?
I love that shit.
Isn't it great?
Now, what I didn't know, it is, and what I didn't know about it was that the they weren't supposed to be black. That Kerry Washington character was not, in the novel, like, they were not black. So, to me, what, like, I think Reese Witherspoon, to her credit, when you talk about making decisions that make the world, quote-unquote, world better, like we were talking about before, she said, okay... Because she was an EP, and I think Carrie was as well. But when they decided to make, to me as a nerd, like that was Jordan versus Bird, like that, the way that they clashed, that was some epic shit to me. And I was like, okay, so if you're gonna do this, Reese was like, Reese was basically the villain, and it's like we're gonna talk about this social stuff because the first episode. When they bring that daughter over and the black boyfriend's there and he kind of rolls his eyes when Reese says something that's kind of like cringy or a little
borderline racist.
Microaggression or whatever. Yeah. And he looks over, the black boyfriend looks over and the girl doesn't get it. And he's like, what the fuck is wrong with you?
Yeah.
I was like, oh shit, this is something different. And I think people kind of, and I guess maybe the way our society's set up, maybe just the way, like I just said, there's so much shit. I don't think people really got that.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I agree.
It's I agree rich.
It's super rich. And it's very interesting, actually, that the role wasn't written to be a black mom or a black family.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, to me, it was obviously about class.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
But the fact that then they made the single mom character black added race into it in a way where, like, that is the way that it works. It, like, it's not class or race, it's class and race. And what I really liked about it actually was that even though Reese Witherspoon was definitely the bad guy, there were so many moments where you, I don't want to say had sympathy for her, but there was like a glimpse of understanding,
of course,
the pressures in her life that, and like the bad choices she made. And the way that society had a certain expectation of her to act a certain way. And then with Kerry Washington's character, it's not just like an unproblematic, she's the good guy because she's single and black and poor and whatever.
She stole a kid.
She exactly. She also did shit that was fucked up. And she was also like a selfish artist and unstable, like in terms of a lifestyle. And so it did a really good thing of graying the areas between what is supposedly being a good mom versus being a bad mom, being a good woman versus being a bad woman. And then the class and race relationship across that was laid on very well. So I say all this to say that Hulu does make really good stuff. So people should check it out.
Oh, they do. Yeah. I have all of them. I need to get rid of cable to figure some shit out, but I think it's some good stuff out there, and that I would consider that to be prestige television, especially when you have actors of those two of that caliber. I love Reese Witherspoon. I mean, I loved Elections, like one of my all-time favorite movies.
I just watched it like 2 weeks ago
for the first time.
So good. Rewatched. Yeah, but I think I hadn't watched it since it came out.
Yeah.
And it was so good and still relative to everything today and just fantastic. Yeah. And actually, that's another weird one where it's like, oh, this like weird young old relationship being depicted.
Yes.
Because it has the whole thing with the teacher trying to sleep with her and whatever.
Mm-hmm. He was unstable. That guy was unstable.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But somehow it was good because it was like it didn't frame any of the participants as good people.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. The movie I was telling you about, it, Miss Fletcher, is an HBO series. They did one season.
I remember with that lady from, what is she from?
Oh my God.
I know which one you're talking about.
I'm gonna find
I remember it. I started to watch this, but I thought that it was, that it was like about her discovering her sexuality or something. I didn't know it ended up being with a teenager.
No, it's not. It's
okay.
Well, he's like 18, 19. He's a teenager still.
Okay.
A divorce.
Yeah, it's weird.
A divorced woman jumpstarts her love life by adopting a new sexy persona and discovers her world is full of unexpected and sometimes complicated erotic possibilities. There's some a little gay stuff in there too. It's kind of this lady, Catherine Hahn.
Catherine Hahn, yes.
Low key sexy to me.
She's hot.
I think, okay, good. All right, she's hot. All right.
Yeah, she's hot.
No, she's hot. Okay, cool. Frances Ferguson's the movie about this woman. If you look it up, like, she's a woman that gets involved with a young high school kid and she kind of doesn't give a fuck. It's interesting. It was on Amazon Prime. It's still there, but it's not free anymore.
I'll check it out.
But I think you can watch it for $3. Like, that's one that just, like, it actually, Nick Offerman is the narrator of that one. But it's okay. I don't want you to spend $3 and be like, Chris, what the fuck? But it was definitely something that I would have seen they do this Montclair Film Festival every year. This year is going to be virtual. Then they're doing some that are like drive-ins. But anyway, yeah, I think we, you know, I would say that you are right, where I think a lot of this stuff is kind of disposable to people.
Yeah.
And you don't have that discourse. I mean, I guess you can fucking do podcasts and go to YouTube, but I don't want to open up another ball of worms, because I do want to end this. I want you to get on with the rest of your life, the rest of your day. I mean, I'm done with you after this podcast.
I know. I'm like, what are you talking about? We're going to talk again right after this.
Yeah. So maybe I'll leave this for off mic. So I think I'll blab about it to you off mic, and maybe we can think about some things. But this was great, Louisa. This is like every time, like I'm so happy that you agreed to do this and we got to shoot the shit on this, because I felt sometimes you kind of I know people like the show, but I haven't seen that many people mention it. People just say, oh, Pen 15.
Yeah.
You see Kumail tweet about it, but it's like, okay, Kumail. Like, I like Kumail, but it's like, all right. But nobody in our circle really does it.
When, especially in comedy, I think there's this thing of like, when your friend puts something out, you always have to like tweet a supportive promotional thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's very funny, because sometimes you'll see like, one time Bill Burr posted something being like, oh, great special by this comic, it was wonderful, whatever. And then I watched the special and it was a really bad special, Chris. It was really, really bad. And to me, I was like, oh, for sure. Like, Burr did not watch this before he tweeted. Like, he was just like, great guy. Love this guy. Oh, no. Support this guy. And I think sometimes in Hollywood, the same thing happens, where they just like support the writers on this show, or they support the creator of the show. And so they will just like, and especially I think with Pen 15, the feedback was positive. So it became easier, increasingly easier for people to just be like, this show is a genius. But not too much critical, feedback. I think I haven't read too much.
It didn't seem like there was enough press on this. Like last year, there was stuff, because in prepping for this, I mean, I read a couple interviews, and then I looked at some videos on YouTube, and you know, there was, and one thing I forgot, because it is, we touched on the nostalgia, and I think I definitely felt that, but I was 6 years out of middle school by the year 2000. So I graduated middle school in 94. So things were a lot different then. They're 32, I'm 40. So it was just kind of like, but the thing that was really got me was the play. Like when they were doing that play, because I was a theater kid. And then after the show, they went to a pizza play, like Italian pizza place.
Yeah.
And that's the shit that we did. Like it was like it was like Topolino somewhere outside of a strip mall, and it was the shit, and everybody would come there after the play. So it does have those moments that are definitely you can touch on, but I think the real gem of this show is the characters and the stuff that they're dealing with. And
yeah,
and they handle it in a way that I think it should be getting a little more credit than they're getting. Not, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. But I did just realize how long we've been talking. So we should wrap it up.
Yes, let's wrap this up. You got to go. Louisa, thank you so much for doing this. This was fucking fantastic.
Thank you so much for having me. I love the show and I do love chatting with you always about almost anything that comes up. It's great to talk with you.
All right. Hold on to the line, Lisa. All right. Take it easy, everybody. Talk to you next time.